I live in Central Florida. My neighborhood is one of those unassuming and quiet suburban havens. Not much happens around here these days. It's important to make that distinction because once upon a time, my neighborhood was terrorized by a serial rapist back in the late 1980s. This was before my time, but apparently he used to hide in the bushes along a bike path that runs behind the neighborhood and would attack unsuspecting females. It was this series of attacks that led to a strict closing time of the trail at 9 o'clock. However, this didn't stop the neighborhood kids from venturing the trail after hours, including myself. I'd say this happened in the summer of 2007. My friend and I, who I'll call Jake, were being a couple of teenage losers and smashing beer bottles against trees along the trail. I'd say it was around 10:30 p.m. To give you a general layout of this trail, it was about 2 miles long and started at a lake that was located at the far side of the neighborhood. It ran along behind the house and ended at a soccer field that was just outside the neighborhood. The area of the trail right before you get to the field was the narrowest part, with trees surrounding it on either side. Despite any moonlight that may be out at night, rest assured that this particular area would always be pitch black. Jake and I were approaching this part of the path. We were planning on messing around at the soccer field on the other side. As we got closer to the opening, I started to get a feeling that we were being watched. I motioned for Jake to stop as I listened carefully. "Is anyone there?" I said on a whim. To our surprise, a dark figure emerged from the darkness of the trees right in front of us. Since the trail was closed at this time, the only lights we had were the streetlights out on the main road, which wasn't much. But we could still make out that the figure before us was wearing a dark hoodie with one of those creepy frowning theater masks. The instant I saw the stranger, I felt a cold chill run through my entire body. I'm sure that Jake felt it too. We slowly backed away. Jake turned around as I kept my eyes on the frowning man. The next thing I heard was Jake saying softly, "Oh crap." I turned to see what startled Jake. There was another hooded figure standing behind us. It was also wearing the same theater mask, except this one was smiling. Jake and I stood back to back as we watched the figures on either side of us begin to walk towards us slowly. I had my eye on the frowning man while Jake watched the other one. I felt another chill crawl up my back as the figure moved closer, then revealing a large kitchen knife in its hand. "This guy has a knife," I heard Jake say from behind me. We had to think fast. They were coming at us from both directions. That's when I had an idea. Right before you go to the narrow path, the trail was bordered by residential fences. These fences are fairly tall, but not impossible to scale. "Jake, we have to jump the fence and get back to the main road or we're gonna be dead," I said under my breath. I tried to be as quiet as possible, but the moment those words left my mouth, the frowning man began sprinting towards us. "Crap, go now," cried Jake. I assumed that the smiling man was doing the same. We bolted towards the fence. I was the first to reach it. I got into a crouching stance and balled my hands together to launch Jake over. Once Jake was on the other side, I jumped up and started to pull myself up. I then felt a hand grab my ankle and was quickly brought to the ground. I looked up to see the frowning man towering over me with his knife raised up. I tried to scream, but my voice caught in my throat, and all I could do was watch as my life ended. Suddenly, the frowning man staggered back as he was then struck in the head by a large object.
"Kevin, start running! There's an opening on the side! Let's get out of here!"
I looked behind me to see Jake perched at the top of the fence. He was pointing to his right. I looked to see that there was a small opening at the far end of the fence. I then scrambled to my feet and ran for it. I practically dove through the small hole in the fence, and I scraped myself up pretty good in the process. But I didn't care. As soon as I got to my feet, a hand shot through the opening and grabbed a hold of my foot, causing me to fall forward. I looked back to see a smiling mask in the fence opening. Jake quickly ran over and then stomped on the smiling man's arm. We heard a muffled grunt
and the smiling man withdrew his hand back through the opening. We then ran as fast as we could all the way back to my house. After we calmed down, we decided to not call the police, as that would have resulted in Jane going back home and possibly never being allowed back over, as well as me being grounded for a week. So, being the narrow-minded kids that we were, we decided to just keep this to ourselves. But you can bet that we never walked that trail after dark again. It's a really good thing that we were both in pretty good shape at the time, but we may have not made it out of that situation. I live in the same neighborhood to this day, and even after all these years, I've never heard of anyone else encountering these masked men. I guess we were just lucky that night. Back in 2012, when I was still attending community college, me and a couple of friends opted to band together and rent out a one-bedroom apartment near campus. We were a bunch of party animals back then, and we wanted our own place. You know, so we could indulge in that lifestyle without worrying about our parents or the school's administration. The apartment complex was located in a rather unsavory part of town. The cops were called out there at least once a week to break up fights or respond to reports of break-ins. All we ever did there was shower and sleep. Having to overhear domestic disputes and arguing through the walls was just part of the deal. One night my roommates went to a party while I stayed behind to study for an upcoming exam. Aside from some Tupac being played somewhere on the upper levels, things were pretty quiet. It was around 11 p.m. when I heard a strange sound coming from the hallway outside the front door. It sounded like a large metal object being dragged across the concrete floor. There was also a muffled noise like someone was saying something, although I couldn't make out any words. This went on for about 10 minutes before there came a loud crashing sound. It was at that point that I got up and made my way over to the peephole. At first, I didn't see anything, so I just waited to see if anyone would pass by the door. About a minute later, a figure came into view and stood between my door and the door opposite. It was a Caucasian male. I now list the three things that instantly made every alarm bell in my head go off. The man wasn't wearing a shirt and was completely drenched in sweat. There was a large axe in the man's right hand that he was dragging behind him. This deranged individual had on a black leather gas mask that had completely hid his face. I was awestruck. This is the kind of thing that you see in a low-budget horror movie. This kind of shit doesn't actually happen in real life. It was a complete shock to the system. As if reading my mind, a creepy muffled voice then began singing. As soon as the man finished his singing, he lifted his left leg and then heaved the axe into my door. The movement was so fast it caused me to topple backward. As soon as I scrambled to my feet, I heard another voice from further down the hallway.
"Hey, what the hell are you doing?"
I rushed back to the door. The masked man was now gone. To the left of my door was a fire escape, where he was able to make a quick getaway. I then saw the apartment security guard step into view with his taser drawn. I then shouted through the door,
"Hey, do you want me to call the police?" "Yeah, if you don't mind. I'm going back outside to cut him off."
I called the police and explained the situation to them. Unfortunately, the masked man managed to evade both the police and the security guard. The complex was surrounded by a small forest, and there were just too many ways for him to escape. After the lease was up, I moved out of that hellhole. A lunatic pacing the hallway outside my door, dragging an axe behind him while singing, was the straw that broke the camel's back. It was a terrifying experience. I'm a 29-year-old woman. I lived in a big city all my life, but at the beginning of April, I moved to a medium-sized town about 1 hour away from the big city, along with my sister and our four pets. This happened after a month of living here. My sister was preparing for her final presentation for her arts undergraduate, which was going to be shown in the city, so she had to spend the whole day there to make her preparations. I was left home alone with our cats and dogs, so in the early evening, I decided to go for a long walk with my two dogs. We walked for like an hour,
But about 5 minutes away from our home as we're headed back, I saw a man knocking on a door about a block away. I thought he looked a bit weird because he would knock on the door, look around, then knock on the door, and then look around again. But he didn't look dangerous, so I just kept walking since I had to pass by him anyway to take the street that would take me to my home. When I was about 10 meters away, he looked my way and started walking towards me. He was tall and slender, and he was carrying what looked like a box of candy. He asked me if I had any coins to spare. I told him, "Sorry, mate, I only have my dog's poop bags. Have a good one." And I was ready to keep walking when he saw one of my tattoos and stopped me. For some context, I have tattoos. I'm not heavily tattooed, but I have several in my arms and legs, and since I was wearing shorts, the ones on my legs were visible. The specific one he was looking at is of a ghost woman in a traditional Japanese style. As he stopped me, he said, "That's a really cool tattoo. Would you give it to me?" I just laughed uncomfortably, thinking he was just joking, but he was dead serious, just staring unblinking at my tattoo. He then continued talking. "No? So you're just gonna let the maggots eat it? Such a shame. It would be much better if a person ate it." At this point, he raised his face and looked at me straight in the eyes with a very flat smile that seemed to be an attempt to be friendly, but only made me feel even more uncomfortable. He then asked me for my name, and not wanting to antagonize him, I gave him a fake one. Let's just say it was Regina. He then asked me if I lived in town, to which I also lied and said that I was from the big city and just visiting. He then told me that he used to live in the city too. He lived on the streets downtown. He told me that he used to rap in buses to get money, and then just out of the blue started rapping about me, still looking me straight in the eye. He rapped about how I was very pretty, how amazing my tattoos are, and in his rap he said that my name was Lorena. I corrected him and said that my name was Regina, not Lorena, since I had suspicion that he realized I'd given him a fake name and was testing me. He just smiled and nodded. He then asked me if I'd give him my number. I said that my dogs and I had to go home now, that we were expected. He pointed at a butcher shop a block away and told me that we could sit over there while I gave him my number, that it wouldn't take long. But I told him that I couldn't, that the one waiting for me at home was my boyfriend. But again, I was lying since I was home alone. His smile kind of faded a bit, and he just said, "Oh, well, that sucks." I wished him a good evening and turned around to leave, only for him to drop to his knees and grab my leg with both of his hands. He then started caressing my tattoo while whispering, "This is a really damn cool tattoo." My dogs are pretty friendly, and they were very calm during this whole exchange, but when he grabbed my leg, they started growling. I pulled my leg out of his hand, wished him a good evening, and just walked away as fast as I could. I ended up taking a longer way home just to make sure that he didn't follow me. And once home, I took a shower and scrubbed my leg really well since I felt really gross after all that. Luckily for me, I haven't seen him again. But for a while after that, I made sure to cover my tattoos every time I went outside, just in case. This happened in 2013 when I was around 12. My mom moved me and my siblings in with my grandparents because we didn't have enough money for rent at the time, and she needed to save up money. It wasn't a big deal though. They had plenty of room and I got to spend a lot of time jewelry making with my grandma, which in my little eyes was such a win that I didn't even realize we were that poor. It was our little pastime after school, and one of my favorite parts was the trips we would take to Michael's to get beads and materials occasionally. Michael's, for those who are unfamiliar, is a craft store similar to Hobby Lobby, and walking around in it is a little girl's dream when it comes to DIY stuff. One day in the late fall, we realized we had run out of wire for a bracelet I was making for my mom, so we headed out to our local Michael's to get some more. This particular day was in the winter, so it had already begun to get dark by 5 p.m. My grandma having vision problems and a bad hip, and trusted little me to run in and grab the wire and pay for it as we had done so many times together before. I was stubbornly independent, so she wasn't very worried about me. She parked right in the handicap spot in front of the store, the sun setting, and the light from the big storefront windows illuminated her car behind me as I walked inside. As I was standing by the display at the front, entranced by some Christmas decor or something, a man walked in through the sliding doors. I noticed him immediately. It was hard not to. He was tall, maybe in his mid-30s with dark hair, and wearing all black from head to toe. His clothes were a bit dirty, and I distinctly remember a big red D1 logo on his hoodie. He had his hands shoved in his pockets and walked briskly into the store, almost frantically. I just watched him. He made eye contact with me for a bit too long, and then continued deeper into the store. I was immediately weirded out, but thought nothing else of it and just went off to find the wire. I found my spool of wire, but getting distracted in the toy section was where I messed up. That's when I noticed him start following me around. Aisle to aisle, I would be browsing, and he would just appear at the other end, fake looking at stuff. He was muttering to himself constantly. You know when someone says something out loud expecting a response, but they aren't really directly looking at you? Kinda like that. As a kid, you don't really realize what's happening immediately. So I just awkwardly walked away from him each time, pretending not to notice him. In my little brain, I reasoned that he wasn't following me, and I walked all the way across the store to the wedding aisle just to look at some stuff I had seen when I first walked in. I figured there'd be no way he'd follow me there, but sure enough, while looking at the invitation cards, I got a spine-chilling feeling. I turned around, and there he is, right behind me, back to me, doing something, messing with something in his pants, doing something really vile to himself. I had never seen anything like that, and the sunken eyes he looked at me with still haunt me to this day. It took me a minute to process what I had just seen, but once I did, I immediately booked it out of the store as fast as I could. Jumping into my grandma's car, she seemed startled by my sudden appearance and asked what I got. I tried to explain what had just happened when I saw him appear in the sliding door in front of us, and the dread I felt in that very moment was indescribable. He approached our car, obviously recognizing that I was with my grandma, and then knocked on our window. I hadn't been able to explain myself in time before she cracked the window and asked him if everything was okay. The man gestured to me with that same crazy stare and said something along the lines of, "She's a thief. She stole from there." I was mortified. He was trying to make her suspect of me, on top of everything else that he had just put me through. Thankfully, my grandma got the same vibes I did, because she politely told him to back away and then rolled up the window while locking the door. He suddenly yanked at the door handle, then swung both of his arms up and started banging hard on the car's roof, causing us both to jump and me to start crying. My grandma then slammed on the reverse and peeled out of there. I've never seen her drive so fast. I don't remember much after that, just the crying and holding a $17 spool of wire in my hands that I hadn't paid for. We called the police as soon as we got home, and luckily they immediately took it very seriously and requested the videotapes from the Michaels. A few weeks later, my grandma told me that they had found him. They mostly left me out of the investigation besides just taking my statement as to not traumatize me further. She got the dent in her car fixed, and that was that. It wasn't until a few years later that my mom finally told me what happened to him. It turns out he already had one battery charge and two sexual assaults on his record, one even being from a minor relative of this, like his niece or something. He had just gotten off work from the gas station across the street when he must have seen me walk into the Michaels alone. I don't know what would have happened if my grandma hadn't locked her door, or if she'd been in there with me, vulnerable to that man as well. I've flown with my 1-year-old solo nearly a dozen times. Usually people are understanding and kind about me having a baby on my lap, and overall he's a happy, easy baby. He's also very cute, so it's not uncommon for strangers to talk to him, and usually I don't mind. The last trip I took, I sat alone in my aisle with a man sitting by himself directly behind me. My baby was tired and fussing. I knew he was tired, but there's not a lot I could do until after we took off. Right out the gate, the man behind me was talking to my baby, saying, "Oh, hi, baby. Why are you sad, baby? Cute, cute baby." I smiled and replied that he was tired. "Sorry for the fuss. Thank you." After takeoff, I started to get him settled for a nap. The man behind us continued to talk to my baby, putting his hand through the seat to try and grab his feet. Multiple times I had asked him nicely to please stop. "My baby was tired. You're distracting him. He just needs a nap." Finally, I set my baby down next to me so that I could make a bottle. The man behind me stood up and reached over my seat to pick him up. I immediately leaned forward to pick up my baby, saying, "No, thank you. I don't need help. Please, no. No, thank you." The man pushed me back into my seat while mumbling, "Sweet baby, why baby cry?" I replied very loudly, "No," and quickly picked up my baby. I thought that was the end of that. I was wrong. I tried to rock my baby to sleep while desperately trying not to lose my cool. As I'm rocking the baby, the man behind me reached through our seats to grab my arm, saying, "No rocking, no rocking. You make him cry." I then pulled free from him and yelled, "Do not touch me." Again, I thought that'd be the end of it. I started rocking the baby for a second time. This time, the man behind me reached both hands around either side of my seat to hold me in place, all while saying, "No, no rocking. Stop rocking." I'm now somewhat embarrassed that I completely lost it, clutching my baby to my chest while struggling to get free of him. I hit the call light while screaming, "Let me go! Don't touch me! Let me go!" He was still holding by my arms when the flight attendants then came running. I could barely get anything out to the flight attendants. Everyone around us was staring, and I was now sobbing. All I could get out was that I couldn't sit there anymore, and for the love of God, please move me. The man behind me tried to move with me, but I told the flight attendants that I don't know him and he couldn't come with me. I had a good cry in my new seat, but my baby immediately went to sleep. I was moved next to the flight attendant seats. After calming down, I explained to the flight attendants what had happened. Multiple times, the man had been behind me and got up to try and come back to my new seat, only to be turned around by one of the flight attendants. Towards the end of the flight, one of the flight attendants told me that they explained everything to the pilot, and that the pilot had called the FBI and local police to escort the man off the flight. I would also be escorted off, as well as everyone around us that had watched everything happen. The man actually cheered as he was escorted off. I had to interview with the FBI and nearly missed my next flight. After my trip was done, I had to fly back, going through the same airport. It was stressful and emotional, to say the least, even knowing that he was banned from the airline in the airport. I haven't flown since. So this took place about 4 years ago, but I still think about it and wonder and Google the name of the farm to see if my bad vibes were accurate. It started with me going upstate to go horseback riding and chilling. Our kids were with their grandparents and my husband had a fishing trip, so I had decided to rent a car and indulge in my favorite hobby, horses. I had not been away on a solo trip for years, and I was really looking forward to it. I found an Airbnb/glamping place that had excellent reviews, nice tents and horses on the farm, and people really raved about the married couple who ran it. I booked and drove up there. Weirdness started as soon as I showed up. There was just something wrong. The wife wasn't around and the husband seemed out of it. I got into my tent and slept since I was late. I slept fine but a bit uncomfortable. There didn't seem to be that many other people around. When I came in for breakfast to the main house, the husband, who I guessed was in his mid-60s, and the exchange student and worker, who I think mid-20s, were making it for the handful of guests. I was late again, and ended up alone with just the two of them. Over the following hour, he explained to me how his wife had left him, and how he was now a shattered man and that he had been forced to take up a relationship with the exchange student and worker. He told me this when she was not in the room, as she's a bit shy about it. I was too awkward back then to walk away. Since then, I've learned to listen to my gut and not be so polite. But back then I stayed and I just listened because I felt I couldn't leave. Long story short, he gave me many inappropriate details that I didn't want to hear about his marriage imploding and his new relationship. After that, he had offered me a room in the main house instead. I turned it down and went back to my tent. I was desperately thinking about how to get out of there. I paid for 3 nights, but there was just something very, very wrong here. I sat down on the air mattress and started going through my phone to see what my options were. As I'm sitting there scrolling, I hear him come to the side of the tent. There was nothing else near it and nobody else. He just stands there, breathing. I can see a shadow through the tent. He's just standing there, not moving. I just froze up. I couldn't think or say anything. I just went still. He stood there for what felt like an eternity, but it might have just been a few minutes. Then he left, and I threw everything I had into my car and just took off. I think I called and said that I had to cut my trip short when I was already far away. I have never been back, and I've never seen anyone else say anything strange about this place online. I can't find them on Airbnb, but the farm still seems operational as a B&B. I don't know if I was overreacting or not, but I still think about that panicked feeling I had in the tent and know that I couldn't have stayed. So when I was 17, I had just gotten my first car. One day, I drove my brother and myself to the dentist. While we were waiting in the lobby, I noticed someone had parked really badly right next to my car. Since it was new, I was pretty paranoid about it getting scratched or something. My brother went in for his appointment, and I decided to go move the car to a safer spot. After I parked in a new spot, I was walking back to the office. Just before I could cross the parking lot to get inside, a minivan with super tinted windows, like so tinted that they had this weird blue hue, pulled up so close to me that it almost hit me. I thought it was strange, but I just walked around it. As I was heading to the door, I caught my reflection in the glass, and I noticed a guy getting out of the van and starting to follow me. At first, I didn't think much of it, and I just started walking faster, but then he started running after me. That's when I realized, okay, this is actually happening, and I started running too. I just barely made it to the door before he could grab me. The door was glass, and I could see his reflection. He was reaching out like inches away from me. He looked like a totally regular guy, wearing a button-up shirt and khakis, which made the whole thing even more surreal. I ran inside, but he didn't follow, probably because he didn't want to be seen by anyone else. I was completely shocked and kind of in denial about what just happened because it all went down so fast. I looked out the window and I saw him holding a purple cloth in his hand. No idea what that was about. He looked around, then got back in the minivan, and then sped off. I told the receptionist, but I was still pretty shaken up and confused. The whole thing happened in less than a minute. I've often wondered what could have happened to me if I hadn't run. I'm a model, and I was doing work for a catalog out of state. During our break, I stated that I was going to walk back to the hotel to get my charger, as it was only a block away. One of the video crew offered to walk with me as he had something he wanted to grab from the hotel too. We got to the hotel with no problems, but I left the hotel alone. As soon as I walked out of the door, a man approached me and then said, "I saw you walking earlier." I had been in the hotel for about 20 minutes, which means that he followed us to the hotel and had been waiting for me. He continued to walk with me, asking me all kinds of personal questions. I tried to politely get out of the conversation by telling him that I have to go to work and that I couldn't talk right now. He continued to follow me and ask me questions the whole way back to where I was shooting. When I got back there, he asked me to come swimming in the river with him. I told him that I couldn't because I have to work. I was afraid to be stern or tell him to F off because I've heard way too many stories of men like this becoming violent in that kind of situation. I started feeling nervous as I tried to open the door to the building because he followed me and was standing right beside me. The door was locked. I started running around to every door, trying desperately to get inside as he followed me to every door. They were all locked. Now I'm starting to get into a panic. A car with two girls inside pulled over and called me to come over to their car. I ran over and he immediately booked it down the street and disappeared. The girls told me that they saw what happened and they asked me if I needed a ride. I explained that I just needed to call someone to get inside and that it seemed that he was gone now. I got on the phone with the other model and she was on her way to open the door. I told the girls that I was okay now, he was gone, and that someone was on their way. As soon as the girls drove away, the man then appeared yet again from around the corner of the street that he left down. He had been watching and waiting for them to leave. He was walking very fast towards me. I then ran up the stairs and started banging on the door, desperate to get inside. He then started coming up the stairs after me when the door finally opened and I closed it fast behind me. Needless to say, I was pretty shaken up. I never feel safe when I walk anywhere now, no matter how short the distance. Even walking across a parking lot is a stressful experience for me. When I graduated high school in 2008, I was kinda at a loss on what to do with my life. I got a job at a local convenience store working the night shift, and for about 8 months, I really enjoyed it. My parents and friends were always concerned about me getting robbed or murdered, and rightfully so, but I had never had an issue with anyone. About a year in, I finally experienced the encounter that made me change my life. It was a pleasantly cool late September evening, and at about 2:35 a.m., the door opens and the skinny, frail figure of a young woman comes in. I'll never be able to forget her. If it wasn't for the way she was acting, she honestly could have been kinda cute. She had a collarbone waterfall of brown hair, tan skin, an attractive figure, and was wearing a tight-fitting dark gray tank top. I'd say she was in her late 20s or early 30s, but it was her eyes that really captivated me, and not in a good way. This woman had this blank and distant stare. It was like she was an expressionless shell, moving purely on a robotic instinct. She didn't say hi, howdy, what's up doc, or anything even after I greeted her from just like 4 feet away. Honestly, I just assumed she was high or something. She moved past the front counter towards a little household supply aisle we had. She picked up a little bag of cat food and turned back towards me, staring me straight in the eyes so intently that I thought she was about to pull a gun and shoot me. What she did was honestly much worse though. She got to the front counter, never breaking her silence or gaze even after I tried talking with her. She reached into her pocket and pulled out a $5 bill and like 3/4. With tax, it was still a little short of the price, but I'd take a dollar out of my wallet and stick it in the cash register later. She was starting to creep me out. Well, after I took the money and rang her up, she didn't move. She just stood there staring at me without even blinking. I tried speaking to her again, but this time she brought the cat food up and opened it with the littlest ease I've seen a package of pet food ever get opened. By this time, I'm just standing in silence trying to figure out what the heck she's doing. Her gaze was unflinching, and she reached into the bag and pulled out a big handful of cat food. She's staring at me as blank and expressionless as the very second she had entered the store. And she then shoved the whole handful of pet food into her mouth and started crunching away. Bits and pieces of the cat food dropped from her lips and onto the floor. I wanted to say something, but I was just too flabbergasted to even get my voice out of my throat. Finally, after a couple of minutes of chewing on her cat food, the woman just turned and walked out of the store, still holding onto the bag of cat food. My boss pulled up camera footage of the incident the following morning before I clocked out. He said that he had seen the woman before, but only once in his 5 years of employment there. He told me, and I kind of think this was a lie, that she was a crazy woman who lived in an old mausoleum in the city cemetery. He said that the cops knew about her, and as part of their initial nightly patrols would go check on her just to make sure she wasn't dead. That was the night that made me decide to go to a trade school.
I never want to work at a gas station again. Every so often, she still appears in my nightmares, just standing there staring at me with deep blank eyes, crunching on a handful of cat food. Yeah, I never want to encounter her again for as long as I live. This happened back in 1983 when I was 18 years old. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and on weekends my friend and I would go dancing in San Francisco. There were many clubs back then that were 18 and up. If you were 21 and over, you'd get a stamp on your hand allowing you to drink at the bar. But my friends and I went to the clubs to dance and just be crazy teenagers in general once we turned 18. I'm female, by the way. One Saturday night, me and my two good friends, Lolly and Kim, and Lolly's boyfriend John piled into Lolly's car to drive 30 minutes to San Francisco to go dancing. Finding parking was always an issue in the city, and so you would end up driving around for a bit looking for a spot either on the side of a street or in any lots that would allow public parking, which weren't many. This night, we had to park about 5 blocks away from the club in this small 20-space corner lot that was fairly dark and isolated. As we were getting out of the car, we heard a voice call out from the car next to ours.
Hey, come here!
Glancing at the person sitting in his car with his window open, we felt very uncomfortable as he sounded sketchy and strange.
Hey, you in the white jacket, come here!
He demanded of my friend Kim. Kim had a freaked out look on her face and didn't want to go over to this guy. John quickened his pace around the car, telling us to start walking to the club and that he'd catch up. He placed his body between the back of the cars, cutting off the sketchy guy's view of us. We saw him turn around to face the guy, saying, "Hey, what's up?" All of us three girls quickly walked around the corner of the lot and down the street out of sight. After a block, we stopped in our tracks, our hearts beating hard and scared out of our minds for John. We had no idea what was happening to him in the parking lot with this guy, and Lolly was freaking out that her boyfriend might be getting attacked as we stood there waiting. This was 1983, so there were no cell phones to call for help, or call anyone for that matter. The street that we were on was all businesses that were closed during this time of the night. 5 minutes passed, then 10 minutes, then 15 minutes. Then about 20 minutes later, to our relief, we saw John coming down the street toward us. Once he reached us, he kept walking, just saying, "Come on." We then followed him at a quick pace, trying to keep up with his long strides as we tried to question him about what happened. He finally led us into a courtyard of a closed office building and then explained what took place. John explained that when he turned to face the guy in his car and went up to his window saying, "What's up?" he could see that the guy had a gun in his hand as it rested on his lap. John said at that moment he pretended he didn't see the weapon and just tried to keep his friendly demeanor. Luckily, John was the type of person who could strike up a conversation with anyone, so this wasn't out of character for him.
"Look, I don't want you. I want one of the girls," the guy said.
But by then, us three girls were already out of sight and were practically power walking away in fear. John just kept his cordial tone as if he was chatting with a friend. "Trust me, man, you don't want them," he said. "One of them is my girlfriend and the other two are lesbians." We weren't, but for some reason, John thought it would discourage the guy to tell him that. John then redirected the conversation, asking the guy about his night and what kind of things there is to do around here. Like I said, John was a talker and just a friendly guy in general, and we were really glad that he was. After a while, the guy had confessed to John that he had been planning to take one of us. John just shook his head and told him that it wasn't a good idea to do something like that, and that he should just go home and pray. John ended the conversation saying that he had to go, and that he wished him a good night in a friendly manner. After he was out of sight of the guy, without a bullet in his back, he picked up his pace to find us and get us to a more populated area just in case the guy decided to prowl the streets. We were all really shook up that night, thinking about what could have happened if one of those girls actually went closer to his window when he called out to us that night. But thank God for John. We could only hope that he took John's advice and went home, and that he didn't find some other girl to carry out his plan on. His car was no longer there when we left hours later. It was months before we could work ourselves up to going back to the city.
but we never park that far away from the club again. So please be careful where you park at night, and never ever approach strangers in their cars.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
This is a long story, as it's been over 5 years in the making. I've actually posted this story before, but there are some really good internet sleuths here on Reddit, and they were able to figure out ex-beauty queen's identity, and mine too. I don't really care if I give up my own identity, but I don't want it to be on my actual account, so I deleted it a while back. The catalyst for me to repost it today on a throwaway is that it's cathartic. Last week, yet another court date for ex-beauty queen stalker came and went. We'd been expecting things to proceed with her entering a plea of guilty or not guilty, but no such luck. All we got was another vague reason as to why she's not ready, and a new court date issued months from now. There have been many court dates since she's been arrested. It's been over 18 months since she's been arrested for a continued stalking and harassment, and she still wants to drag things on to seemingly try and stay relevant in our lives. As an aside, the amount of court resources and taxpayers' money that's wasted is actually really astounding. Anyway, on to the story. To recap, my husband dated a beauty queen title holder for a well-known pageant before me. They broke up long before we met. She was a statuesque blonde, very tall. A knockout in her day, in my opinion. This is somewhat important to the story, I guess. But while she was a dazzling pageant winner on the outside, on the inside, oh boy, she could be charming and beautiful if she needed you. But mostly, she treated people around her terribly, including my husband, and he eventually broke it off with her, but she never went away. She would continue to call and email repeatedly, even after my husband and I met. If anything, her calls increased. She would call over and over again, day and night, even after my husband blocked her number. She would ask for money and threaten to go to the police, claiming he abused her if he didn't give it to her. He obviously didn't give her any money. This made her upset. The threats increased and became more malicious. But when that didn't work, she would switch tactics and try to sweetly ask him for help with certain projects that she was trying to get off the ground. Or more importantly, have him do the work for her and she take the credit. All with the promise that if he just did this one last thing for her, she would go away. He did not comply, so she would go back to being malicious. Any tactic for attention, or for what she really wanted. Money. My husband was terrified, because of course, while he never did anything to her, it would be her word over his, and he was really terrified of ruining his reputation and career. We unfortunately ended up in an event that she also attended. She had been waiting for us to arrive, and had placed herself near the entrance of the event. As we walked in, she stood across the room, looking me up and down, laughing and whispering into the ear of her date, making a point to try and make me uncomfortable. But that was okay. She was easily ignored until she ambushed me as I came out of the bathroom. She had clearly been waiting for a moment when I was alone. She towered over me. Yeah, she's very tall. I had no intention of having it out with her, as I then hurriedly walked to find my husband. But she kept pace beside me, hunched over so that she was at my eye level, her head turned towards me. She was like a caricature of herself as she ambled beside me, smiling maniacally. "Where's your man?" she hissed in her heavy accent. Her eyes were black. She looked like out of a Tim Burton movie, hunched over with that crazy demonic smile. "Watch your back, pug," she added, grinning. She liked to call me names like Pug because I own pugs, and I guess she thought this was an insult. What I didn't know then was that while I was in the bathroom, she walked over to my husband and had thrown her arm around him while he was in mid-conversation with someone and then introduced herself to the man he was talking to as if she and my husband were together. My husband then unwrapped himself from her clutches and told her to beat it. She then beelined and waited for me to come out of the washroom. We stopped going to parties. The last time we ran into her was at a funeral for a mutual friend. She actually followed me around at the wake. As my husband was talking to the man's widow, I was talking to a friend and his wife. She walked right up and stood with us, joining us mid-conversation as if she were part of the group. It was unnerving, but also just bizarre. It was a funeral, and I didn't want a scene. I silently picked my wine glass off the bar and walked away, leaving her with the couple I'd been speaking to, and her staring at me with a smirk on her face. All in all, annoying but manageable. However, the emails and calls never stopped. She would call my husband over and over, day and night, even though he had long blocked her number. She would also drive by. I found my car keyed one night after I left it outside, but obviously I couldn't prove it's her, but enough was enough. My husband had a lawyer send a cease and desist. After the first, she called him from a private number. He answered and she said,
"Hi, it's me,"
in a sing-song voice like they were the best of friends and he hadn't just sent her a lawyer's letter ordering her to stay away from him and his family. He just said nothing and hung up. Another cease and desist was sent, then a third. Nothing would make her go away. She didn't actually think my husband was capable of not wanting to be with her, because you know, her beauty. Eventually though, she got pissed that he wasn't giving in. So she decided to take this rage to the internet. I knew that she was absolutely checking out my social media, but I don't really use it much, so I didn't care. However, she created a fake Twitter account and tweeted. It said that my husband is a fraud and tagged his colleagues, friends, investors, and family members. Every single person she could think of to try and ruin his reputation and career. On New Year's Eve, she posted on my Instagram account at exactly 12:01 a.m. "Happy New Year, scrud." Social media settings were all put to private. We went to the police armed with the emails threatening to give her money or she would go to the police. She was charged with 2 counts of harassment and a restraining order was put into place. To our shock, the next day after her arrest, our phones were buzzing. The story had made front page news. Clearly a slow news day. Her day in court came right before COVID. We arrived at the courthouse and sat down. She walked in. We were shocked by her appearance. Actually, shocked is an understatement. She was unrecognizable from her former self. Gone was the statuesque, dazzling blonde. She had apparently shaved her head, and she was wearing a short, ratty brown wig. She had gained about 80 pounds, give or take, and was now sort of hunched. With her height and new girth, she looked like a linebacker. To add to her new look, she wore a bulky brown man's overcoat and a scarf tied over her wig, like a babushka. My immediate thought was, her outside now matches her inside. But it was her eyes that I noticed the most. About a year earlier, we had shown a photo of her to our kids so that if she ever approached them, they knew to run. At the time, my son, who was young, commented that she had mean eyes, from the mouth of babes. Maybe it was that she had changed so much physically overall, but her dark eyes had narrowed into deep black slits. As she scanned the courtroom and saw us in court, she would turn around every so often to look back at us and glare. She would then whisper in her lawyer's ear and then laugh as if she were having a grand time. She had a pair of big round cheap sunglasses that she would put on and take off intermittently. When she addressed the judge, she put them on and he had asked her to remove them. We thought she was putting on a brave face and treating it all like a joke, but we were about to find out that getting arrested wouldn't slow her down. The restraining order didn't seem to faze her at all. If anything, it just anchored her more. From then on, every day, night and day, she would post from multiple fake social media accounts, posting photos of myself and of my husband. She would put up my husband's photo with the caption, "pedophile," that or other terrible names that included racist comments and captions. To give you a slight idea, she posted altered photos of my husband, photoshopped to look like he was wearing heavy makeup and referring to him as pre-op transgender. She also posted altered and unflattering photos of myself. She called me old and ugly. These are the G-rated ones. Listen, I'm no beauty queen myself. The name-calling, while obsessive and gross, wasn't what bothered me most. Although, I'm not going to lie. Seeing hundreds of photos of myself on her fake Twitter account calling me ugly and obsessively pointing out every single perceived flaw did succeed in getting me down a few times. Why did I keep looking? Because it was like getting a glimpse into her unraveling and unraveled mind, just in case it was a clue of what she was capable of or thinking of what to do next. Because it wasn't her insulting post that fazed me. What bothered me most were the sinister captions. Keep an eye on your kids because I'm watching. Or why don't you plant some flowers in your front yard? Or be good to your kids because you never know what could happen to them. How was your Uber Eats order? She would post pictures of me with an arrow directed to my head, which I perceived to be a gun to my head. She posted pictures of my husband's workplace, which she was not allowed to be within 2 blocks of, in accordance to the restraining order. But the police said this could be just a picture that she took from the internet. Sigh. She posted Agatha Christie quotes like, "Every killer is usually someone you know well," or "Your end is near." Her Twitter profile banner picture was taken from a movie poster and said stalker, like she was in on the joke. We called the police again, but they said there wasn't anything they could do since she didn't explicitly tag us. I took screenshots of everything. Many of her posts were nonsensical, but most were photos posted of us on this fake account, all altered with derogatory or ominous captions. But we couldn't get her shut down. I became anxious anytime my kids were outside shooting hoops in the driveway. My elderly mother wouldn't take the baby out in the stroller. She was too scared. It affected all of our lives. Life became dramatic. Ex-beauty queen would taunt us with, "Catch me if you can." She posted close-ups of her dog's genitals or a piece of her dog's shit with my name beside it. The implication obvious. It really bothered me that she now had a dog, since I didn't think someone like her was capable of caring for anything living. Then the calls started back up. This time to our home line. Yes, we still have a home phone. She would say bitch and then hang up.
Karma will get you.
And then weird chant-like calls as if she were reciting a spell. Sure enough, she posted photos of a pentagram and candles as some sort of altar and the caption, "Ring, ring." Finally, and I mean finally, the police asked us to come in and give video statements. We gave them a drive containing thousands of screenshots of posts that she had made. They arrested her again and charged her with 2 more counts of criminal harassment. My husband was angry at this point, but as a mama bear, I just wanted to get this over with. She mentioned the kids frequently and ominously many times in her online rants, also calling them rude names, which I won't repeat here because these are the things that upset me the most. The judge also issued a social media ban for her. By the time she was rearrested for the second time, her fake Twitter account, which was literally mostly insults or references to my own family, had 16,000 tweets in a 3-month period. She has no followers, so they were just to herself. The porn sites I had been continuously being tagged on stopped. Things quieted down tremendously, but I still get follower requests that I believe are her. But at this point, we were all on edge. I kid you not, I felt weird walking into my own kitchen at night to make a sandwich, feeling creeped out that she was outside watching. I put nothing past her, as nothing is more dangerous than a desperate woman who has nothing to lose. Which, by the way, was one of the quotes that she actually posted. I don't know what's wrong with her. I believe from what I've researched, she's a malignant narcissist. Perhaps some other mental issues are at play here, but I can say that she was a terrible person long before she decided to try and make our lives so miserable. Crazy beauty queen turned stalker. I would love nothing more than to never meet again, but if going to court helps you stay away from us forever, then bring it. As an aside, I wanted to mention that we heard from a reliable source that after my husband broke up with her, she allegedly became known to the police for other reasons. While my husband dodged a bullet regarding her threats to go to the police saying he abused her, well, apparently other men have not been so lucky. since I can't post pictures, I'll leave you with one of her posts. One that may not make much sense, but to us, it was a statement to let us know that she really enjoys this drawn-out court process. Many of her posts are in her native language, so this is translated. Violent women and the cruelest never answer questions. They like to continue the misunderstanding indefinitely, so I seek to contact these people only in order to torment them. My cruelty is my last attachment to the world and my last sheik. Update. Hi everyone. I posted about my family's experience with my husband's crazy beauty queen ex, and it's been a few years now. I wasn't going to post an update, but I still get a ton of messages asking how things are going, and I figured why not? We feel much more protected now that it's over. Thank you again for all your kindness and support. To recap, my husband dated a beauty queen of a well-known pageant before we met. Once we started dating, she went nuclear, and it felt like we were living straight out of a Stephen King novel. It was a scary and stressful time, to say the least. I'm sure it would give her great satisfaction to know that she affected our lives in such a negative way. Let me start off by saying that the court process is long. It took years for resolution. During that time, she had to go live with an assurer. For those who don't know, because I certainly didn't, the assurer has to front up the bill money, which was over $1,000 but under $5,000 in her case, and have the defendant live with them while they're out on bail. Her initial assurer was her mother, but after she was rearrested for continuing to harass us, the judge said that she had to have a new assurer since she kept breaking the law under her mother's watch. Since COVID, everything's done via Zoom in a virtual courtroom. There have been a few court dates during the past few years, but only her lawyer was present. These court sessions were basically asking to defer, etc. It was all very long and drawn out. The last court date was last August of 2023. I was curious as to what she looked like now, and to have this finally behind us. Finally, she appeared in the virtual courtroom. She was no longer wearing the wig. It looked like she had some real hair. It was short brown and pinned straight. She was the same weight as I had last seen her in person, and she was wearing a long white sort of coat, almost like a lab coat, no makeup. She was scattered, couldn't get her Zoom to work, wouldn't come into focus in the meeting. Even the judge repeatedly asked her to be visible during the proceedings, but she didn't listen to him. She kept going out of sight. She had the San Francisco Bridge as her Zoom background. Anyway, it was a total gong show. But in the end, the result of this last court session was that she didn't plead guilty or not guilty. Instead, she was able to agree to certain terms or risk being arrested again. To be honest, I found it slightly confusing, but at least it was officially over. The most interesting part for us was that after the virtual court proceedings were finished, the judge told us that we could switch off our cameras. We did, but she didn't. So, my husband and I watched fascinated as the judge presided over other virtual cases, and she, while on mute, sat on a chair and called someone on her phone. She began crying, then laughing hysterically, then crying again, but looking into the camera as she's doing this. I couldn't tell if this was accidental or not. Was she trying to gain some sympathy, or was it an honest mistake? We will never know. Lastly, I add this with a huge caveat that this is pure speculation. I had mentioned in my original post how she posted pictures of her dog's crap with my name beside it. However, when my friend looked through the pictures, she observed that no way could crap that size come from such a tiny dog, and when I looked at it too, I couldn't help but agree, but my brain refuses to process. If it's true, then just gross. However, this also will be something that we'll never know. Probably for the best. Either way, karma has caught up with her big time. We know from one of the bail variation requests that she lives in subsidized housing. I haven't seen her in person since the original court date back in February of 2020. I received quite a few messages from people who knew who this was and said that they had run-ins with her. Specifically, a person who claimed a family member had been scammed out of money by her. That's all there is to tell. Our lives have moved on, and I'm happy to report that no news is good news. I'll always be extremely cautious about my social media settings, but I don't really think about her anymore unless I get a request for an update. Thank you again for your messages and for all of the support. As for the crazy ex-beauty queen stalker, we are absolutely thrilled to no longer have to deal with you or your crazy shenanigans any longer. Hey everyone, that's about it for today's stories. If you have your own story that you would like to send, you can send it in at southerncannibal.com or you can email it at southerncannibalstories@gmail.com. I look forward to telling your story. Have a good night or good day, everyone. And remember, to always...